Dollar Bin exclusive. This just in. We were at Charlotte Minicon this past weekend. Bet you that's not the news you thought I was going to talk about. A lot of things have happened in comics this week, and we're not going to talk about any of them.
we're going to talk about what
happened last week. The reason that we're together, all of us, because the entire Dollar Bin was invited to this, and I got stuck with Heather and Sean.
Well, you do live with me, so we are kind of stuck all the time together.
Got that right.
Whatever, you got the most awesome members.
That's a good way of looking at it. It's all about spin. It's all about spin.
I got all the members with vaginas except for Brian.
Oh!
Really? Are we going to leave Ted out of the vagina brigade?
Yeah, I am. Because Brian's got sand in his vagina. That's how I know he has one.
That explains a lot.
So
we should be mean. It's Brian's birthday. We should be nice to him.
Oh yeah, happy birthday, Brian.
Happy birthday, Brian. You hate your birthday, but it's okay.
I hope you didn't really work 13 hours and go home and cry, because, well, that's just sad.
He's going to work 13 hours because he's going to stay. He got there probably first thing in the morning. And
but is he really going to go home and cry?
But let's
face it, Brian?
Let's face it.
Did he really work?
Did he really work 13 hours?
It's his birthday. We should be nice.
Happy birthday.
Charlotte Minicon was this past weekend. You know, I talked to Big Game before the Charlotte Minicon about getting all these segments together and doing all this shit and being awesome.
I even brought my Buffy with me.
I know.
What did you do? Did you not do the stuff that you said you were going
to
do?
No, I totally sat behind Jason Latour pretty much the whole show and just watched.
And Jay, Chris, and Dwayne.
Spent a few hours at Loopy's.
God, they're so funny.
Yeah.
Jay, Chris, and Dwayne are, like, every time I try and take a picture of them, they made, like, the most ridiculous faces.
Have you seen their faces? Oh!
Oh!
Roasted.
So mean. How long are we going to have to do the Boom Roasted?
Forever.
What is Boom Roasted?
It's that Michael Scott from The Office.
Ted has started it.
It's now in all our email chains.
You don't read our email chains. From The Office, there was that one when they did a roast of Michael Scott.
Yeah.
And everybody made fun of him.
Yeah.
And he got his feelings hurt.
Yeah.
And then he came back at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And he was like, Kevin, you're fat. Boom roasted. Or like, you know, he just kept saying boom roasted.
Boom roasted.
So now it's a thing.
It's
boom roasted.
It's one word.
Yeah.
Boom roasted.
Boom roasted.
Okay.
So yep. Ted brought it into the email chain, so now we are all boom roasted. So, Charlotte Minicon.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was your first one. Heather, go.
It was my first one. It was a lot of fun. I was a lot tireder than I expected to be at the end of the day, because I don't know that I felt like I did that much. But I guess with walking around and taking pictures and being behind the Heroes booth some, I was actually pretty tired, especially when we actually got to sit down and do an interview.
Yeah, I think you actually worked harder at the Heroes booth than I did.
And then, of course, you know, the Dollar Bin event following the Minicon of T's 30th birthday party.
It was even rougher than last year's.
Wow, yeah.
Last year's was rough, I thought.
Yeah. I'll say this. Terrence's brother's kind of man pretty. I'll throw that out there for the world. That's all I got. I like dreads, apparently. Sup.
So, Heather, did you buy anything at the Minicon? That's how you
No,
wrangle.
I didn't.
You didn't buy anything?
No.
Well, I'm sure all the dealers there appreciate that.
I know. I'm not a digger yet. And so I'm rather overwhelmed when there's that many boxes.
Oh, that is.
They were pretty much in order.
Yeah.
It's not really digging. It's in order.
I don't know where to start.
You just gotta walk around, see what looks good, and then just jump in there. There was that guy with the 60% off trades.
Yeah.
I bought a couple stuff from him.
I actually had trouble focusing in his area, though. I don't know why. Oh, because of my resolution about trades. I kept seeing like 60% off trades going, I can't buy any more trades until I've read the ones that I have.
Yeah, I bought Sweet Tooth from him, and Dusty bought Jimmy Corrigan from him, and then I bought Jimmy Corrigan from Dusty. True story.
Well, that's the other thing too right now is I'm kind of backlogged on stuff I'm supposed to be reading, so I don't want to get further behind.
You are not a true comic fan. The comic mentality is, oh my God, I have to buy it now or else I'm never going to see it ever, ever again. I have to get it right this second and then pile everything up and not read it.
Well, outside of that thing that Devin couldn't find, I've never really heard that story where people can't find stuff.
Oh, it's because it, no, the Superman.
Yeah, that thing.
It doesn't really happen. Like, you can always find things later on, but that's not the mentality.
Oh, no,
absolutely not.
Well, I don't have the mentality. I have a stack already that I have to read.
You don't buy it now, you'll never see it again.
Yeah.
And if you do see it again, it'll be a lot more expensive than you see it when you totally. See it
Totally. Yeah.
It's just the way it works.
But I did do an awesome interview. At least I hope it's awesome. It seemed awesome.
Well, with that being said, Heather, let's go ahead and listen to the interview you did with Chris and Brandon Padgett right now.
Ooh, let's do that.
Hey, everybody. This is Heather coming to you from Charlotte MiniCon. I'm here with
Brandon Padgett.
And we're sitting down with Chris Brunner, the elusive Chris Brunner, to do an interview at Charlotte MiniCon.
Howdy. I'm feeling elusive right now.
Oh, just start just talking. Tell us a little bit about
sibilance,
yourself,
Chris. Sibilance.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us your art background.
My art background. Shoot, I saw Star Wars and Superman, and actually the washing machine in my house had a poster with all the DC superheroes when I was like 2 or 3, and that was just the eye level. So I was just crawling around the kitchen staring at that all the time. And then I started trying to draw those characters.
So your inspiration's from a washing machine? That's pretty cool.
Well, yeah.
Who in your family was interested in comics?
Oh, I was born the years when the Superman movie came out and Star Wars came out. So my parents took me to see those. So they were just, I don't know. That was kid stuff. That was my bedroom sheets and the coloring books were all that kind of stuff. So I probably didn't get a comic until I was 8 or 9 years old and I got sick and, you know, my mom got me a stack of comics.
Comics makes everything better.
If you don't have cable, yeah.
Do you remember what any of those first comics were?
Yeah, it was one of those Marvel Universe things where it's a shot of the character and then, like, their backstory, height, weight, the group they're affiliated
the
with,
stuff.
Their powers.
That was in 85. They
probably
released those in 85. Those were
right,
really good.
So I was like 7 then, I guess.
They re-released them, I think, in 89.
Really good
right.
stuff.
So I got one of those, and then a few years later, I started getting the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man comics.
Oh, yeah.
Those were at the grocery store, like the spinner rack.
You're not that old.
No, I'm not that old. I'm a tyke.
You are a tyke. You're saying all the stuff from my childhood, and I got 6 or 8 years on you.
Well, I brought up age with Heather before and paid for it, so I'm not going to do that again.
What? Paid for it?
I got a look.
You did get a look.
Yeah.
She gives everybody that look.
Only when they deserve it. So you want to tell us a little bit about what you have going on right now, work-wise?
Sure.
Come on, pimp yourself, Chris.
I'm working on a comic called Loose Ends that Jason Latour wrote, and my buddy Rico Renzi, the colorist, is coloring, and we were all hanging out before any of us were really getting work anyway. So we've been planning on doing this for a long time. So I'm drawing the interiors and cover for that. And then I had been doing covers for NOLA and Boondock Saints the last year and a half. But now that Loose Ends is on a schedule, like all my extracurricular stuff out of the picture. Like I'm on lockdown. And then so Loose Ends will be in a preview book on Free Comic Book Day. And then the first issue will come out in July.
And you've got, what, I think an 8-page spread in the Free Comic Book Day book?
Yeah, I think it's 8 or 10. I want 8. I don't want the 10 pages.
Is that going to be pages from the first issue? Or?
Yeah, just the first 8 pages. I think if you go past the 8 pages, then it's too much of the story. So,
Can you tell us a little bit about what Loose Ends is about?
You should probably ask Jason. I'm not good at explaining it. It's a crime story.
Okay.
There's a car and guns and a girl. And I was interested in it because although it's a crime story, there's like a bunch of different locations. So there's like a shitty roadhouse bar. Am I allowed to curse?
Yes, please.
There's like a shitty roadhouse bar for the first issue. And then there's like John Hughes-y kind of high school stuff in the second issue. And then Miami in the third. Like I get to draw a whole bunch of stuff and a bunch of different styles. So that's why I was excited.
One of the things I really like about your work is your attention to detail. And you draw, I think, sometimes a lot smaller than what some traditional artists do as far as your page size is a lot smaller.
As far as traditional stuff, yeah, because there was a standard size. When you got a mainstream job like at Marvel or DC, they would send you the Bristol board at a standard size, and it's all kind of ruled out and everything. And then, but then once computers started coming into the process, you could theoretically work at any size. Then it became about a certain file size, dimension-wise, and dots per inch, which is the resolution. And then theoretically, you can ink at any size. So a lot of people now work small. I think Corey Walker and Sean Murphy also ink on smaller size pages. And I don't know if you were talking about the thumbnails that you've seen me do that are really tiny.
No, I think you brought some pages and stuff that are smaller than traditional. You also, when you'll have a page, and if you don't like something, you'll actually put stuff over it, won't you? If there's just certain panels in that.
I'll redraw the stuff. Now I draw on both sides of the page. I'll ink most of it on one side, and then there's, if I make a mistake, I'll have all my pencils printed out on the back side too, so I can just go and ink the panel twice. So I'll do a lot of that. But then also, the way the images and the panels are organized, there's a lot of line work that's, what it's called is knocked out line work, where it's I've drawn it in black ink, but then we turn it to a color. So I'm actually organizing a lot of the panels like animation cells, where they'll have the figures drawn on one layover and then a background on another. So I kind of end up doing that with the pages, where I might ink a background of the panel on one side of the paper and then the characters on the other side, and then merge them in Photoshop.
How's it different working with friends on a book versus people that are just all kind of paid to work on a book?
I can't speak. For a lot of people, my experience, that means that I talk to them and we hang out. Like, generally, I get a script at the beginning of the job and never talk to the people, which I was always kind of a jerk about stuff. If I got a script and I didn't like it, I would change significantly what was in the script. Like, you can't change the dialogue, but the way I was it was explained to me by the, I guess I wouldn't say teachers, but the people who taught me, Rob Haynes, Brian Stelfreeze and stuff, when I was younger, I used to be able to talk to them, and Brian would let me come over to Gaijin and stuff. And their golden rule was, like, the dialogue can't change, but everything else is up for grabs. So I totally did that. I would ignore, just because I was, you know, pretty arrogant at a certain more arrogant than I am now.
Oh, I would not describe you as arrogant.
So the difference really is that if I have to check with other people. We all have veto power for this project, so I have changed the script a lot, but Jason's in the next room, so I walk next door and say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z instead of this, and generally that leads to a conversation, the resolution of which is, it's not what I wanted to do, and it's not what he wanted to do. It's the, as Larry David says, a good compromise is when nobody's happy. So we have a lot of good compromises.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about the Kickstand Kids, how it started.
Well, that started, like I said, Rico and I was drawing and he was coloring, but we hadn't gotten too much professional work. And then around that time, Rob Haynes and David Self had done a Daredevil miniseries. And it was really obvious when you saw it that they worked together. It wasn't black and white line work that went to colorist X. It was obvious that they had a conversation. And because of that, the line work and the colors worked better together. And when the colorist and the artist aren't having a conversation about the work, what you end up with is finished black and white work, and the colors are sort of just an afterthought, at least at that time. It's almost counterproductive. You end up doing a lot of work in the black and white line work that it's really not economical to be fully illustrating stuff all the time when you could just easily say, well, I could put all this cross-hatching here, or I can just talk to the colorist and make sure he just puts a really dark color there. It's a more elegant solution, I guess. We started working together and just gave it a name just so we would be considered a team. That, like, if I got hired for a job, they would know that they're getting a team. I didn't want to risk colorist X. And there's a lot of good colorists, but there's a lot of bad ones too, and you just don't want the crapshoot. Because the first few books I did, when you see it on the stands, my experience was it looked worse on the stands than it did when FedEx picked it up from my door. And it should look better if more people have worked on it since then. I was getting entropy instead of an improvement on things. So that's how we started working together.
So how does it differ being on this side of the table versus being someone at a con that's not an artist?
People who are not artists probably have fun with that. I used to love going to cons and, you know, coming back with a giant stack of comic books. That doesn't happen anymore. I don't get to get up and walk around. You know, it's work. I'm at work.
Yeah.
It's fun work, but it's work.
When you get the opportunity, if you get the opportunity, what do you read? Are you reading anybody's stuff now?
Occasionally I will. But the last thing I read that I really liked was Mysterious Pollock. I thought that was a pretty great read. And I randomly, Jason had a BPRD, I think 1947. I ended up picking that up and accidentally reading it. I don't usually read the regular Hellboys anymore. Like, I can't tell what the hell's going on. But I thought 1947 was a pretty good read. Scalped. I read Scalped, I guess. I don't know. I don't buy a lot of comics. I probably bought like 10 comics in the last year. I'm ashamed.
That's all right.
I hear that Thor book is great. I totally want to track down the Thor Mighty Avenger book.
Oh, it
that
is.
That looks awesome.
Yes. Marvel sucks for only giving us 8 issues of it. When we have 25 Deadpool titles, they suck.
But see, I know that book from DeviantArt, so I kind of get my art fix from scanning around DeviantArt.
Yeah, because Chris Somni posts a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and the colorist of the book does too, so.
Yeah.
I've seen that, a lot of it.
That
anyway,
book is
yeah.
just, I love it. I love the art, I love the story. So, very disappointed that Marvel canceled it.
I think everybody is, yeah. That book seemed to be doing really well. And I read about that book first on NPR's website.
Oh, really?
I was looking for news, and I came across Thor.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like I went looking for a comic book.
Well, if you're not reading a lot of comics, are you picking up inspiration from other mediums, TV, movies?
yeah, it's hard to say how there's a direct influence, but I probably, the same kind of fix that I used to get off of reading comic stories, I do get off from watching movies and, you know, like the HBO TV shows.
You were a big fan of The Wire, weren't you?
Yeah, I just watched The Wire. I went through the whole series a couple weeks ago. That's like the fourth time I've been through the whole series, yeah.
You can't just watch one episode. You've got to go wire to wire.
No.
Pardon the pun, wire to wire. You
right.
have to.
That gets pretty
It's
addictive.
So good.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies, you want to tell us how you got involved in the Criterion Collection?
Eric Skillman is the art director for the Criterion Collection, and he came across, I believe, Rico's work. But he follows comics. The guy who's deciding what the Criterion Collection looks like, he has a whole stable of like artists. I guess he writes comics on the side, so the other people that worked on those projects have worked on his comic projects, too. So he had to put together, I don't know, 10 or 15 posters. So, yeah, everybody was kind of game for that. They sent us a list of movies, and they all got snatched up really quick. I wanted to do The Thin Red Line, actually, but that was gone by the time I saw it.
But you got to choose that one, right? Or did they choose you for that?
Yeah, that was the second or third choice. Yeah, they sent us a list of movies to choose from, like, what did we want to do?
Do you find it's harder to work on an existing property, like doing the Boondock Saints covers, versus creating your own, as far as capturing a likeness?
Capturing a likeness isn't too hard for me to be satisfied. The person who's in charge, very often, yes, it is. Boondock Saints was especially, you know, they were especially particular. And I've done licensed stuff for Nickelodeon and NBA, and they were less hands-on. Although I still had to, like, NBA stuff had to be approved by the team, the league, and the individual player. So that depended on, a lot of times, the player's temperament. So I drew Kobe Bryant's face many, many times, you know.
Yeah,
like 7 times.
Wow.
And that was just the nature of the office, because everything that I worked on there was some kind of license.
Yeah, you mentioned about kind of a shift from drawing male athletes to now you've got predominantly like female characters in Loose Ends that you do a really good job, in my opinion.
Well, there's just the one, you know.
But she's pretty prominent in it, at least the first issue. And you draw her beautifully.
Well, thank you.
As a female reader,
I'm enthused about drawing a female character than a male character. I would be happy drawing women all day.
Yeah, no, she's.
And it is difficult to like come up with a male character that you want to draw. Really,
yeah,
who's like interesting enough that it's not a chore. You know, so if it's not, I don't know, a character-specific likeness, it's hard to...
You've done a really good job with her, because she walks the line, I think, of being super sexy, but still sweet enough that female readers won't be turned off by that.
I hope so. That's definitely a concern, and I sort of intend to draw, like, regular-looking pretty girl, but then once I get into the drawing, I do get carried away, you know? I mean, for any drawing, the process is of, you know, you put down a line or a shape, and it's like, is that good or bad? Or, you know, this way or that way? Should it be over a little more? And when you've been to the eye doctor, you know, they put the lenses in front of you, and they go, this one or that one? This
and you're
one
like,
or that
I,
one?
I don't know. They look the same.
If you're drawing a female character, you go through that process, and it just ends up being like, at least with me, it just ends up being like, yes, this is a hyper-attractive woman. You know what I mean?
But she's not so much so that, like, you see in some of the traditional superhero comics, Power Girl, for example, is just off-putting as a female character, in my opinion, because she's ridiculous.
She is ridiculous. I mean, that's part of the tradition of comics. All the old superheroes look silly, and the male ones look silly in a certain way, and the female ones do, but I totally get why that would be off-putting. And the only difference I could say is that, at least with the character in Loose Ends, like, that's a person to me, and you know.
She does seem to have a very distinct personality.
She's a very attractive person, but I have an understanding of, like, her brain, like the rest of her, you know, her body language and all that kind of stuff. It's not just Power Girl is. There's only two characteristics to Power Girl.
And what are those, Chris?
Right. She's a very, you know, one-dimensional character, I guess. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. I understand why female readers are, like, sensitive about that or find it off-putting. But that's not, just to stick up for comics for a little, I go to the grocery store, I see what's on the cover of women's magazines. Like, anywhere you see women presented in pop culture, it is about them being, like, ridiculously, unrealistically attractive.
Right.
Like, nobody gets up in the morning walking around like that. Even Natalie Portman, there's like a whole team of makeup people and wardrobe people making an effort to make her look like that.
Right.
You know? So that's my modest, you know, not even a defense. I'll just say the caveat.
All right, well, unless you've got anything else you want to tell us about that's in the works. So we're looking at Free Comic Book Day for, what, eight pages for Loose Ends, and then we're looking at which month for the first issue out?
July. And then every 5 weeks following that.
And how many issues are there right now?
Say what?
How many issues will there be?
Just four? Yeah. I think they're going to be oversized, though.
Ooh.
We're dealing with printers right now.
Ooh.
So I think it might be a giant comic book.
Nice.
Proportionally, you'll feel like you're 8 years old.
Is there a plan to put it in trade after the four issues come out?
I hope so. People have to buy it first, I think, for us to earn the trade.
Well, having seen the first issue, people need to pick it up. And I plan on encouraging people to pick that up.
People need to pick it up.
All right, Chris. Well, thanks for talking with us. It was fun.
Thanks for talking to me, Heather. I appreciate it.
We're still going to be recording because I don't know where Adam is to turn it off. Do you know how to turn it off, Devin? Adam's really bad when we record, huh?
So, Heather.
Yes.
Your interview with Chris. We just listened to it. How did that work out for you?
I'm going to say it was awesome. although I really wished some of the stuff that Chris and I and Sean discussed at T's party could have been recorded as well. But I don't know that Chris would agree to interview in that state.
Nope.
I don't think he would interview about those topics either.
Man, I love talking to Chris. The cool thing about talking to Chris is he'll talk about anything. But once it's like there's evidence that he said it, he starts to question what he said. So I really just kind of I enjoy Chris. I love getting interviews with Chris. It's awesome. I think he gave a great interview. He gave some awesome answers. But he's more fun to just talk to. He's one of those guys that, like, I talk a lot about, you know, hey, I was at this show and I talked to all these people, but only got three interviews. Chris is like that kind of guy. The guy that I just want to, like, if I don't see him, it's like, man, I haven't seen Chris in a while. I just want to talk to him. He's just more fun to talk to. It feels less official. Once you put a microphone in front of people.
I don't know what you're doing to microphones, but I think we found out why you get bad interviews.
It's really uncomfortable to talk to you with this mic inside.
That's not what you do with the mic, Adam.
Once you put a microphone in front of people, they immediately become a representative of themselves.
Yeah,
or other people.
Or other people in some cases.
Chris is definitely, if you have the chance to talk to him at a con or at Heroes, you should definitely sit down and chat. Yep. He's very entertaining. And everybody should pick up the first issue of Loose Ends when it comes out.
Now, well, are you going to talk about something you picked up?
I didn't pick this up. I was given a gift.
Ooh.
So I was just, you know, sitting behind the booth and Brad Parton comes up. He's like, hey, Brad Parton is the wonderful dude who does the Alpha Sketches. We've talked about him on the show before.
Oh, right. Brad Parton.
Yeah. What he does is he takes the entire alphabet, A to Z, and he creates a character out of the alphabet using every single letter only once. And he knows that I collect his Muppets Alpha Sketches, so he gave me a Gonzo. I know. I felt very special. He wasn't set up or anything, so he brought it up there and gave it specifically to me, and I felt very special, and I really, really, really appreciate it.
Another cool gift that Sean and I received was from our friend Ted Tarver. And Rico Renzi, who is an awesome colorist,
yes,
who we're going to be seeing more of in the future.
Oh, yes.
I hope.
We will.
Yeah, we should be.
Who is the colorist on Loose Ends, as we mentioned. He did a couple of paintings, one of which was of Kitty Pryde and Lockheed.
Everybody knows Adam's got a crush on Kitty Pryde.
And so,
crush, obsession, whatever.
So Ted bought us the Rico Renzi Kitty Pryde painting, and I now have that on my bookshelf. Earlier, we were talking about talking to Chris Brunner and how he is, he talks better when he doesn't have a mic in front of him because he feels more comfortable, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I did an interview with a person who may possibly be the exact opposite and is very comfortable with a microphone in his hand and talks quite a bit.
I think I know who you're talking about.
That would be Dusty, would it?
That would be Dustin Harbin.
Dustin K. Harbin?
Dustin K. We did talk about his lettering, so yes, that would be part of...
Okay.
But yeah, I did an interview with Dusty. It's the first interview I've had a chance to do with Dusty since he stepped down as creative director of Heroes Aren't Hard to Find and went into his own thing. But I go over all that in the interview, so instead of talking about it now, I will let you listen to the interview. Check.
Can you hear me talking?
I can.
Is that too loud?
No, that's great. That's...
Do you want me to sing or anything?
Yes, because I'll tell you, that time at Fluke when you were singing Neil Diamond, that
was...
Was
I drunk?
Yes.
That was I've actually just remembered. That was one of the really cool things about Fluke is that it's in a bar. Is it still in a bar?
It's in a music venue, nightclub type place now.
Do they serve
now.
Booze?
Mm-hmm.
Still throughout the
yep.
show? Okay, yeah.
That's yeah, they did last year. Last year was in a theater.
But still with booze.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Right. I don't think as many people would show. I mean, I think people love the show, but I don't think if there is, if there's no alcohol, the numbers would be a little lower.
It added a weird festive air. Yeah, for sure.
That voice you hear is the voice of Dustin Harbin.
What was that voice you just put on?
That was my radio
voice. That voice
you
hear is...
The voice that you hear now is the voice of Adam.
Good morning, Zoom, here with...
I think last time we interview you, we interview and we introduce you as Dustin Harbin, creative director of Heroes Aren't Hard to Find.
Yes, that's correct.
Not the case anymore.
No longer.
So...
But they're... Much smarter people are in those positions now. Like your wife.
Yes, she's pretty smart.
Sean, D-A-U-G-H-H-E-T-E-E.
Correct.
Did you see how I dispelled it again without prompting? Or
not even. You don't even have to stop
Ran
and
right
think about it.
And I'm packing up my table as I'm doing this. This is amazing.
He did not read that off a piece of
your
paper.
Your name is not even hard to spell anymore.
No, it's not. It's only two syllables.
I moved into cartooning full-time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the next time I'm at HeroesCon, I'll be as a guest rather than an employee.
Yeah.
Which will be really interesting and way more relaxing.
Are you going?
Sean though, is about to learn. Woo.
Are you going to run around and demand things from the
No, I'll be the
what
last.
What is with my table?
Sean, kind of awkward, but I really kind of put on my form that I wanted more light. I need a direct light source. And, I mean, it's okay light. I mean, I guess it's medium light, but I really need good light. You know what I mean? Because for what I do, you know, I draw small and blah, blah. No. Sean's really good for that kind of thing, though, because Sean's more naturally hospitable than I am.
Yes.
So she'll be very good in that sort of position.
Hopefully she won't be walked over, though.
I think she's got a crisp. She can be crisp. One of her
when
talents
she's in the
is
zone.
That she can be like this, all done. Boop. You know what I mean? And yeah. She's got good people working under her, too, so I think she'll be good.
So now that you are not
unemployed,
regularly employed.
Right. Now that you're super poor.
What is it that you're doing to pay the bills there, Dusty?
I letter Casanova, now in Comic Shot. I think issue 5 just came out. The best one so far.
Now, I know that Casanova had previously come out, and you're relettering Casanova.
Yeah, I'm still relettering.
But eventually,
yes.
That story's going to keep going, right?
Yes.
It's not going to stop like it did last time.
No, volume 3, I guess, I don't know when it'll... Look at all your pens on your backpack.
There. I know. I don't have a Dusty pen. You don't have pens.
I don't have a pen yet. One of these days.
Why haven't you done
one
pens? Jay Chris has a button maker. All you need is little circles.
I need a contract with him, yeah. I need a contract with him. I could do circles.
No problem.
Yeah, volume three starts in the summer sometime, I think.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through. Excuse me, I got the burps. I mean the hiccups. That sounds cooler. Burp sounds gross. I've got the burp ups. I'm halfway through issue seven right now, which means that I bet the first issue of the third volume will come out in probably July or something, maybe? Does that sound right? Maybe earlier? I bet it'll be out for San Diego. They usually time that. Marvel times a lot of stuff for San Diego. So yeah, it's going to keep going.
Now, the very first, I bought your first, the first issue of the re-released Casanova.
And then
and the
second.
When
you also bought this the subsequent issues. Wait.
I did. I bought the subsequent.
I was trying to catch you.
Now I have
you're slippery.
I have the hardcover Casanova.
I do as well.
And I the very first thing I did after reading it was I A-B'd every single lettering
you
box.
What? What?
I A-B'd every single
you told me that.
Lettering
you
box that you did.
That's very strange, but all right.
I was curious.
Kind of obsessed. That's
it was
flattering,
a little.
Though.
I was like, you know, because I've never seen that before, except for like maybe a European book or
it
like
is
when
a strange thing, to completely do again something which was done perfectly fine the first time. It wasn't like it was badly lettered the first time. Yeah. Now, believe me, I asked myself the entire time I was doing that, what am I doing this for?
But
this should look like perfectly sound choices that he made.
But you did make some different choices, though. You moved some things around.
Choices, yeah.
You hand lettered this.
I hand lettered the whole thing. Oh, I think I just mashed up a piece of original art. Well, my world, that's like $5. I just destroyed $5 in value.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I did hand letter everything, which is different from the original. I think it's the only reason it's being re-lettered. I think that Matt just wanted a hand-lettered
look,
you know, that kind of organic personality. Thank you, Sanford.
That was the other thing I did is I looked
at,
like... I
bring Sanford Green with me to all the shows I go to help. He's really good when helps packing.
Hello.
Yeah. He's very friendly with people.
Sanford,
yeah.
You've had your time.
He's a really nice guy.
The other thing that I did is I actually would say, okay, there's a G. Let's see. There's a... Okay.
Yeah, are you trying to catch me?
Those are a little different. Those are a little different.
Once in a while, during the editing process, I will copy existing letters. When it's when you're trying to get everything done to get to the printer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Still hand-lettered.
Yeah, it was just hand-lettered digitally again.
Yeah. I don't know. I get bored sometimes, you know.
That sounds
it happens.
Like you're super bored, but I mean, if I'm the
it was
you know,
a unique
the benefactor
experience.
Of that boredom, I had
and
no problem.
You did a damn good job, Dusty.
Thank you very much. The current ones are much better, I think.
Yeah,
the first
getting,
one looks
getting better
rough
at it.
To me now, yeah. I mean, lettering your own comic is different than lettering over someone else's artwork.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Like one of the things I noticed is like when there's like a amplified voice, like you use a different lettering style than and like
well,
something
it's that
you change some of that
character.
Stuff.
Fabula Berserko.
Yeah.
Later Ruby Berserko.
Yes.
Because of events in the story. Who just talks different. So in the original, he/she had a some kind of like little mark on the speech bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I just did it a little different from. Other than that, though, I generally don't alter very much.
Yeah.
I like the idea of lettering being invisible. So you're not really thinking, you're thinking about the story, not about like, look at that G. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when they do, I don't think they do it anymore. I don't want to speak ill. No, they don't. Like when they used to,
sorry.
A few years ago in Thor, they would have like this weird gothic looking crazy letters whenever Thor would talk, like he was a god speaking or something.
Yeah.
It would drive me bananas because it was.
It's like, I get it.
You'd be like, oh yeah, it's a comic book. This dude is not a Norse god of thunder. He's just a stupid comic book. Jack Kirby brought back in the 1963 or whatever. Or 60. When did he come back? It was probably before 63. Anyway.
Do you plan on, are you going to do other lettering? Or is, I mean, like.
I think I probably will. I think I have someone that is working up Darbin font right now. Yeah, and I think I'll do that. And it also will speed up hand lettering Casanova. Because I draw those letters on a Cintiq and then print that out and ink it. So if I had my own font, I could just type it on. Print it out and then ink the letters. So the letters are still done by hand, but the planning process is way smoother because you're working over
that must speed things
art.
Up a lot.
Oh, it does. that first issue, I was doing everything on a light box, just literally tracing over the. What are you doing, Jay Chris? Dude, I'm speaking to the press. All
we're
right?
trying to be professional over here.
I'm speaking to some noted South Carolinians over here.
We're global, man.
Oxymoron.
We have listeners
in
Australia.
Do you want me to throw that away from you in the middle of my dollar bin interview?
Yeah, I mean.
Yes.
Oh.
That was with his right hand, ladies and gentlemen.
And I'm right-handed to boot. Totally.
So you were lightboxing lettering.
Yeah.
The letters.
And yeah. I was beatboxing lettering, too.
Yeah.
Which was
not productive,
wet.
But
it was a lot wetter. It was a lot wetter when I was beatboxing the letters. It didn't work nearly as well as I expected. I was kind of disappointed. I'm just going to say it was a mistake. People make mistakes. So sue me, Adam.
So how are you enjoying lettering?
I'm enjoying it more as I'm getting better at it.
Yeah.
As it gets smoother.
Is it an honorable profession?
There is no honor in lettering. You can ask any letter and they are some skip, scop, scalawags. And that is no lie. I can't count the number of times I've been given social diseases by letters. After I asked them, too, I'd be like, are you, and they'd be like, oh, yeah.
You're making some pretty good money doing that.
No.
No, not at all?
No.
No.
I mean, I make some money.
You make money.
It's not, I don't think anyone gets in that.
You're not making Matt Fraction money.
No. Well, I think the way I understand it, Casanova is very much a labor of love. Like, it sells okay, but it doesn't sell anywhere near where anyone's really getting a profit out of it.
Yeah.
And I believe all the money that I get paid and whoever else gets
is
paid
the profit.
Comes out of Matt's pocket. I'm pretty sure, it's not so much a Marvel book in that Marvel's like, yeah, oh, sky's
the
limit
now, so.
Yeah, which is kind of like it's creator-owned in Marvel. Although Marvel's been really awesome. Like, the editor on that book, Alejandro Arbona, is really hands-on, which I did not expect it being an Icon book.
Yeah.
Which is really like the creator shepherding it, and Marvel's acting as the printer and publishing agent. But Alejandro gets right in there, edits too much in some cases when he disagrees with me. But other than that, yeah, he's totally awesome. It's been pretty great. It's good. It's nice working with the editor, too, in that you learn certain things that you might not otherwise working on your own thing in your little dark room. You know what I mean?
Well, speaking of your own thing in your little dark room.
Yes, back to me.
And working on it.
Yes. Ooh.
Now, you have got your own thing.
I do. I have my own thing.
Would you consider your work webcomics? Or is it just work
that's kind of
that
semantic.
Ends up on the web?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, that's a big, dumb, semantic debate, but the idea of a something being a webcomic or not is really just a question of delivery.
Yeah.
Like, how is someone interfacing with the work? Yeah. So, yeah, it's a webcomic. It's also a print comic. It's also whatever, you know, whatever way I feel like someone wants to look at that.
An audio comic
for me and I can make money on it, I totally will do that. I am leery of any categorizing of webcomics as same in the same way that, like, these days the idea of a newspaper comic is quickly becoming a dumb term, you know. Most people don't read newspapers. Comic's a comic. I mean, I didn't read Calvin and Hobbes in the newspaper. I read it in book form. I read it as collections. Yeah. Same with maybe Far Side you might read in a newspaper.
I read Far Side in calendar form.
Yeah, so it's the web or print or book or newspaper or just delivery. That's just publishing.
Yeah.
Whereas the work is the important part. Because there are some webcomics that are amazing in any format. Like the Abominable Carl Kershaw. Have you seen this? Or not the Abominable Carl Kershaw. That's the name of the creator. The Abominable Charles Christopher, I think it was called.
Yeah.
The amazing webcomic, gorgeous book. Crazy gorgeous book. And there are some things that can only exist as webcomics because maybe they don't need to exist, is another thing. They might not make the jump to other formats that easily. Mine, for instance. No, man. Mine's great. Mine's awesome. On sale now. Darbin.com.
So Darbin.com?
Yes.
Which is...
That's my name.
You know, D-H-A-R-B-I-N.
Dustin Harbin without the Uston part.
And so tell us a little bit about your comics that you do.
My main steez, it's nice that everyone's helping me break my table down as I talk about myself.
You've almost broke the entire thing down by yourself and during this interview, so...
Which is, as actually, somehow I'm better at it like this than I am when I have given my full attention. I'm usually the last person out of a room.
You still might be the last one out of here.
Oh, my comic is the one I do mainly and am known for more now, is a daily diary comic on my site, which I'm about to wrap up probably in a month or so.
What do you mean wrap up?
Finish, stop?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few more, and then I'll be done. I just penciled November 30th
Yeah.
And then once I finished 2010, I think I'll just be done.
Okay.
They take like a long time to do, and I can't really do anything else while I'm doing them. So
yeah,
I'm kind of excited about being done. Tell you the truth. God's honest. Hand of God, dude. I'm real excited about it. Real excited.
And those all got printed. Not all, I guess. A lot of your strips.
The Diary Comics got printed as Diary Comics number one, which goes from January 1st to June 30th. So the first 6 months of the year.
Okay.
And I'm about to do a second one as a mini comic that Koyama is funding, but not publishing.
Okay.
Well, I guess they're publishing. I mean, it's basically like Anne is paying for me to do it.
Yeah.
Because she's awesome. But I'm going to print it myself.
Okay.
You know, like kind of like a normal mini comic. She's just funding it because that stuff costs money.
Well, that's kind of the opposite of what you get often with publishers. Usually they won't pay for it, but they'll distribute
everything
it.
About her is the opposite.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, it's kind of amazing the stuff she's done for me this year. She's amazing. She's just the best.
You did, I saw with Heroes, they did like a hero spotlight to all the MiniCon attendees, guests.
Yes.
And you were one of them. And
by
you
they,
did
you mean your wife?
Yes.
I saw where they, yes. Nameless, faceless, my wife did a thing. For those who may not know, that's not private, is it?
No.
Adam is married to the event coordinator of Heroes who
organizes
and promotes a lot of the convention and shows.
Yeah.
I just find it humorous when you're like, when they were sitting at the kitchen table working on that.
You
and I was in my underwear.
You had mentioned
complaining
that.
Complaining about the bacon.
I'm vegetarian, Dusty. Shows what you know about
Sweetie,
me.
I'm vegetarian. What the
what is it, bacon?
What the heck?
Bacon?
I almost said a dirty word.
Yeah, I think you did.
I said just the first
Oh, that's okay.
Half of
that's
it.
Okay.
What the
I was going to ask a question. Yes, one of the things that you mentioned that you were so proud of was you did a newspaper in 2010.
I did do a newspaper, yeah.
What prompted
have
that?
Have you not seen that?
No, I have.
Okay.
I have.
Let me give you
no, I have it. it was a lead up to the question.
Newspaper was a Kickstarter thing. I wanted to do some color comics. They're really expensive. And so I did a Kickstarter, meaning that I raised funding through that website.
The project
people,
Kickstarter.
It's Kickstarter.com.
Kickstarter.com.
And it is a... God, Adam. Kickstarter.com. God, jeez, God. Yeah, I raised money through that site and did that, printed that myself. Well, with the newspaper printer, but like did all the layout and stuff. Sent it to them, and that was it. And then I had a color comic I could give away. It's kind of amazing. And that's how Ann Koyama found me. Is like we met at TCAP, and she was like, "I love this. Oh, this is great." And emailed me a couple, maybe weeks later, I guess, a couple months later.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was doing that paper was really great. It wasn't great in terms of making money, but it was really great in terms of just creating interest. You know, a lot
it
got funded really fast, and a lot of people were like, "Huh, who's this dude?" which was nice.
Yeah.
I had been known for another thing previously, and it was a way to get known for something else.
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense?
What prompted the newspaper, though? Why that format?
Well, it's actually cheaper. Like, the way newspapers are printed, it's on this great big web press, and I printed 1,000, which ended up costing around $900, I think.
That's not bad.
It was supposed to be less than that.
No.
I think it was like not quite 1,000, actually. So I got to print like 1,000 of those for that much, which is kind of huge. And if I had printed it as a 24-page mini in color, 500 or 1,000 of them, that would have been an insane, I mean, just an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
I think I got a lot of interest in a big newspaper that I wouldn't have in a color mini comic.
Yeah.
There's plenty of those. So that was good. It was nice to be a little weird.
So what do you got coming up?
Next is that Diary number 2. And then work, and Heroes Con in June. Actually, TCAP's in May. Fluke, maybe. I'm not sure if I'm going to do Fluke yet, but maybe.
It's going to be in a pretty big venue this year.
So
it's
many
been growing
tables
every year.
Have?
I don't know. Last year, it was weird. Last year, the room was supposed to be bigger, but it felt smaller.
I don't mind feeling small.
But more people showed up last year, like twice as many people showed up last year than the year before.
You mean four tables?
Yeah. Like
See,
it's.
I couldn't go all the way down there and not get a table. It would be upsetting.
Well, you could do like Rob and Jay Chris did last year and just pull tables out of a closet that they found. Make
yeah, I'm a snob, though. I'd need to be, I would not want to go all the way down there and be like, I hope I have a table.
You're like, I need a table.
Yeah, well, you know. I mean, you're not going to make a lot of money at Fluke. It's mainly a socializing
it is.
Con, which is great. I mean, the last time I was there, I had a great time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm poor now. Anyway. Last time I was down there, I had a weekly paycheck.
Yeah. Bye, Brian.
Bye, Brian Eisen of the Dollar Bin Podcast.
And Heroes and Dragons.
Dollarbin.net. Not the Dollar Bin.
It is the. We have both.
Oh, okay. TCAF, Heroes Con, SPX in the fall.
Yeah.
Sweet. Awesome. What do you got coming up?
I have not a clue.
You need to get on that.
I know. To, 2011 just started.
Well, almost a month ago.
We do have the Dollar Bin Anthology. Every year we do a Dollar Bin Anthology. We've invited you a few times. I don't think you've had time. You always had so much going on with Heroes and freelance. And
yeah, that's true. That's true.
You don't really have much going on now, right?
Oh, I see. On the air. Is there a theme to it?
Buried treasure. So I thought maybe you might already have a couple of diaries.
A lot of nose picking.
If you have some diaries involve nose picking, those could easily go in.
We'll see
what you have laying around.
Let's talk off air.
Okay.
See. When I get angry, yeah. You son of a. Where do you get off?
How dare you?
DOGHHIT.
You better edit all of that. Don't make me look like a damn fool.
Yes, I look forward to talking about the Dollar Bin Anthology, the dollarbin.net anthology.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot. We miss you. We don't see you as much now.
Well, you moved. You took Sean and moved away. Whose fault is that? Was that my fault? I don't think I married her and took her to another state. I didn't transport her across state lines. That was you. It was you that did that.
That's true. We still seem to be up here every weekend, though.
That's somehow. You go.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dusty.
It was a pleasure, sir.
I love Dusty. Follow up. Explanation. I loved Lil Darbin. Lil Darbins are my favorite. Lil Darbin in the kazoo. I love that. Love that little story.
Well, I was at Charlotte MiniCon. I did not ride a pony because I forgot to. Actually, I did not ride a pony because I would break it.
There are horses.
I know. I didn't ride a horse because I forgot to. I even had $3 in my pocket.
They're trying to raise money. Raised like a lot of money. They did like super well. Like way better than they thought that they were going to do.
That's good.
Yeah. Dig a pony.
But one thing I did.
What are you doing?
I'm doing a Beatles.
We're gonna get sued now. Great.
Oh no! Was that 40 seconds worth?
No.
And I'm not even sure I could identify what it was.
Dig a pony.
Yeah.
That's what the song is. Dig a pony. Anyway, one thing
I can understand her.
One thing I did pick up is I bought 11 issues of the Marvel Star Wars series from back in the 70s, 80s.
Hey, Sean, what was your favorite part of the mini-con?
I took a bunch of pictures and had a lot of fun and actually got to, like, talk to all the guests. That was new for me. I even, like, I could have looked around more, but I,
Are your pictures posted anywhere?
They are. They're on the Heroes Facebook and Flickr site.
Is that all your pictures?
The pictures that are posted of mine are there, though. I think maybe, like, 5 or 6 made it. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe more, maybe like 10. I don't even remember. Rico did it.
Yeah, some of my pictures are in the hero stuff too.
Yeah, and the Dollar Bin. You have a bunch of pictures in the Dollar Bin Flickr page.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Star Wars books, you know who did some art in a Star Wars book, one of the Star Wars tales?
Lots of people. Lots of awesome people.
You know.
But who in particular?
Sanford Green.
Sanford Green.
Yeah.
He was at the Charlotte MiniCon.
He was, and I got
an
interview
with
him. He's
super nice. I liked him.
You got an interview with Sanford Green? Well, we should listen to that.
Yeah, let's go ahead and
listen to that. Was he super nice in the interview?
Let's find out. So, hey, this is Buddy Prince. Wait, no, I'm just sitting in Buddy Prince's chair. That doesn't necessarily make me Buddy Prince, I guess, does it? This is Adam of the Dollar Band. I'm here. You, sir.
Hey, you, sir. No,
we are here at the Charlotte MiniCon in Charlotte, North Carolina. Sitting up here on stage, I'm next to Sanford Green.
Yes, yes.
Hi, Sanford.
Hi.
Yes, this is Sanford
Green. This is me. I am Sanford Green.
And Sanford, I've been seeing you for years at these Heroes Aren't Hard to Find events, and this is probably, I think this is the first interview we've done with you. No.
Yeah, my feelings are almost hurt. We talked briefly at like a free comic book.
Yeah, you had that Method Man book out.
Yep, the Method came out and
yeah,
came and went, and you know, so did you guys too. So You know, there was no love after that as well. You know,
but I hear you've been pretty busy lately, Sanford.
You can say that. I'm doing some things, trying to make some things happen into 2011. I don't want to say 011 because
I keep saying that.
You say 011?
I do. Really? I do. I can't help it. Even when I write it, I write 2000.
Well, 2011. I'm trying to make sure that you know
that goes away.
Yeah, we can make. We're trying to make some things happen here. Some projects that I'm working on right now. I guess for starters, I'm starting out working on a Dark Horse Presents. They're relaunching this year.
Yeah,
pretty excited about that, to be a part of that illustrious group of talent. Some legends.
Who all's involved in that?
It's kind of the who's who. Neil Adams, of course, Mike Mignola, Dave Gibbons, Frank Miller, of course. The list goes on and on. The creator of Concrete.
Paul Chadwick.
He's in there. And like I said, it's just a nice array of talent across the board. I think Brian Boland is in this thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, what? And you want me? They need something, kind of like... I guess the how did Mike Richardson? He approached me about this at San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah,
and he said, "Yeah, we're looking for that new flavor." I'm like, "New flavor? Oh man, what do you know anything about flavor? You get flavor, but it was really cool, and I was honored that he wanted me to be a part of it. Of course, I jumped on the opportunity because you get to create your own characters, and it's on a scale, to have it presented through Dark Horse. You can't get any much better than that, So I'm excited about that. So that'll be coming out June.
Yeah.
Well, it starts in April, but my issue starts in June. And it's an anthology, of course. Yeah. And my story is 8 pages.
Are you writing it?
I'm plotting, and I have an awesome writer by the name of Chuck Brown. Local guy, actually. He's done a lot of independent stuff.
So not go-go Chuck Brown.
Not that Chuck Brown. Not him. But he's a great writer, up-and-coming writer. He's done a lot of independent stuff. I keep my hands on a lot of the up-and-coming guys. Yeah. Like I'm some type of veteran or whatever. But, these young dudes, man, they're coming up. But, I was digging some of his ideas from some of his own creative, comics, and that was really cool. And I was excited to bring him on board because he's excited to do new things. And the name of the title is called Rotten Apple. Long story short, it's basically imagine if you were the only reason a city still exists. That's pretty much just imagine your abilities keeps a city from being totally wiped out off the face of the earth. It's a very poor, ruined city, and it kind of plays off of, New York, but it's a lot more grungy and kind of apocalyptic. But the reason why it's not completely destroyed is because you're the one that's keeping it. You're like the pulse.
Yeah.
You're kind of the rose in the concrete kind of concept.
You definitely got me intrigued about that.
Oh, yeah.
I got my own visualization, but yeah. I mean, I have no idea how close I am,
Yeah.
Oh, God, buddy's back.
There he is.
Oh, dude.
I told him, man. I was like, dude, you gotta go. He was like, no, you'll be fine. I'm like, okay.
Oh, play it cool.
Yeah.
Don't make eye contact.
Keep your head down.
Do you want your chair back, buddy? You're good for a little bit. Okay. So you got approached about this project.
Yes.
Like I said, we've talked to you before.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm familiar with a lot of your work. You did some Spider-Man stuff.
Right.
You want to tell everybody, just me who may not be familiar with your work, kind of some of the stuff that you've worked on.
Well, that will be everyone. But I've done, my first works was at Dark Horse. It's kind of funny how this is coming full circle. I did Planet of the Apes when the movie came out, the Tim Burton flick. And shortly after that, I did some Star Wars stuff. That was fun. Hopefully I can do some more of that coming up.
I'll have to go back through my Star Wars. Like, it's funny. It's like artists like, that I didn't know you when I read the Star Wars stuff. And now that I know you, I'm like, I have to go back and check.
Go back and dig.
Which one's?
Well, there's only one issue, so you're going to have to do a lot of digging to find that thing.
I've got almost the entire...
all of the Dark Horse Star Wars.
You have the Star Wars Tales?
I have some of them.
Okay, so I worked on that.
Okay, okay.
The one that you don't have, that's probably the that's one, that, the one that I worked on.
I think that was like,
yeah. but, yeah, I did that, went over and got my first gig at DC working on Superman. That was cool. Then after that, did some independent stuff, Army of Darkness. I think that's when my career started to, I guess, grow a little. People got familiar with my work at Dynamite Entertainment doing the Army of Darkness. And then shortly after that, went back to D.C. and did a miniseries, Wonder Girl. Well, before that, I did some, covers. I did a lot of covers for the Batman Strikes line and covers for Legion of Superheroes, the animated version. Covers for Teen Titans Go, and then I went over and did the Wonder Girl project. And, I'm trying to keep
trying to think of everything.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm throwing all, I'm giving you the entire catalog.
Want anything that Sanford did.
Yeah. The discography of, and then I went to Marvel, did Spider-Man and Deadpool.
So the Spider-Man family?
Marvel Adventures, Spider-Man. Okay, Marvel, it's kind of like the, that's the brick into Marvel type book. Yeah, a lot of the quote-unquote new talent, they get in by doing that. Did some Deadpool stuff, and now I'm working on a lot of like animation projects. Some pretty cool things, actually. I'm working on a new project for Disney, pretty much designing a new show for Disney. I'm pretty excited about that. I also have another project called 1000 that's a part of MTV's new graphic novel line that's coming out. A lot of really cool creators, independent creators, are a part of that. So I'm excited about that as well.
Yeah.
I'm working on a documentary.
Like a video documentary?
Yeah, like a video documentary, which this can be a part of it as well. if I had my camera guy here, but I don't, so.
I've got my camera.
You got your camera? Well, there you go. But yeah, we're going to do a documentary, kind of, taking footage on just the behind the scenes on how I came about to create this Project 1000.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. A lot of people involved with that. I'm excited about that. And that should be coming out on MTV.com around the summertime.
Really? Okay.
It's going to be three installments. So the three parts, and by the winter, the third part will be out, and that's when the graphic novel should be dropping shortly after that.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Lots of stuff, man.
So you're like the busiest person in this room right now.
Well, next to Shelton.
Yeah.
Shelton. I mean, look at him. He's walking around now.
I know.
Look at that. He did a pirouette. Man. He's like, what's going on?
Somebody said my name.
Someone touched my garment. But, I'm very fortunate right now to be working on these projects. So.
The first work that you did that I recognized, that stood out to me, that and probably because it's what I read. But,
it was something bad?
No. It was the Wonder Girl.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was the first thing.
It wasn't that bad.
Well, I remember I picked it up. You know, it was a very cute style.
Yeah.
It fit the character very well.
Yeah.
And
I'll take cute.
You'll take cute.
Yeah. Now I will.
Now, is that part of your style, or is that the style you're going for that character?
Well, it's a little of both. It was the style, and I think at the time I was still trying to figure out where I was going. You know, when you're working in this industry, it's kind of hard to, with everything so deadline heavy, you don't have a lot of time to figure things out, except that deadline. If it's due a month from now, that's what you focus on. And at that time, I was still kind of finding myself with my style. So with having the structure of a deadline, I just basically focused on that for the most part. I'm just now really getting comfortable with my style, because it's weird because, you know, when you're in the mainstream comics, especially now, there's only but so much of a pushed style you can do. A lot of companies are publishers, they like things to be kind of uniformed. You know, it has to have that same kind of look.
Yeah.
And if the flagship book has artists such and such working on it. Everything under that needs to kind of resemble that. I don't really agree with that, but that's kind of how it's become, because it's safe. And a lot of companies are afraid to take chances now. You know, the economy has a lot to do with that. But I think even before the economy, you know, it was kind of like, okay, this is a sure bet. If this look is there, yeah, then we know it will sell, you know, kind of thing. As opposed to someone like Chrissy, or, you know, even her work, even though it's on covers, it's still on a book that's kind of like non-mainstream.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
has that.
Superhero.
It's non-superhero. Yeah. And honestly, that's all I wanted to do with superhero. I mean, trust me, Marvel and DC try to, you know, they try to get me to, hey, you ever thought about drawing, you know, this comic? This I'm like, you know, I'm like, no. You know, I was pretty stubborn. I wanted to do superhero comics. But unfortunately, with that, my style for what they wanted, I didn't have what they were looking for or what they needed at the time for the mainstream book. But Wonder Girl was something that was kind of cool because it's new. It doesn't have any kind of preconceived approach to it or anything, except if you've seen anything that she was a part of in Young Justice. I'm sorry, Teen Titans.
Teen Titans, yeah.
So that was good for them to say, hey, put him on this because it's a teen book, or at least she's a teen character, and he's good at drawing this type of,
kind of,
you know,
hip style.
Yeah, well, hip or just young.
Yeah,
I've heard it all. I mean, you got cartoony, urban, hip. I heard anime before. I'm like, anime.
Nah,
really?
I,
you know, it's like, oh god.
That's the sloppy categorization. That's the anything different is anime.
Yeah, that's people that don't want to process it. You know, they don't have the. Anyway, it's one of those things where that book was kind of, it was a good thing, but at the same time, it almost pigeonholed me to some degree, because it's, oh, he can draw young, cute girls in this real cute style, you know, and
it was.
It was cute girl in a cute style. But, you know, I wanted to go beyond that. I wanted to grow. It's almost like, in a weird kind of way, I was almost knocked for trying to grow. You know, it was like, really? You want to do that? Well, this is over here. And when I would suggest, well, that's cool, but I would like to kind of go with this more darker style. And they go, really? They kind of look at me like, why you want to do that? You know, and so I knew that the only way to get to where I really needed to be with my approach to art, I needed to kind of break out and do something that was totally off the radar. There was no advanced understanding of it or anything. It was just straight something new. That's kind of what this Dark Horse project is bringing me. I've gotten a lot of great feedback from it. A lot of people that didn't think I could go in the route that I'm going, which that's kind of a, it's not anything like, see, I told you I can do this kind of thing. It's just more of, wow, I'm actually able to do something that I felt like I could do all along, but just didn't have the opportunity to. So I'm pretty excited about it, and again, I'm very grateful for the opportunity over at Dark Horse to work on it.
Yeah,
and we'll see some pretty exciting things happen here. I would think, I would hope. You know, Dark Horse is a good company. So,
yeah. So you live in Columbia, South Carolina, which isn't really known as a center of comic books.
It's not known of the center of anything. But. Oh, did I say that? Sorry.
So how does living in Columbia affect being an artist in the industry?
It doesn't. I mean, you can live in, you know, Hoboken or wherever. And as long as you have the internet, I think you could can do anything. I really enjoy living there. It's close to being here, not too far from Atlanta. That's where everything is, really. You know, all the great artists are within these two states. So it's like Georgia, North Carolina. So, and I'm right in the middle, so that's pretty cool. It's nice to be, you know, the meat of two. It's kind of, I don't know if you want to use that analogy. But.
I do.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
That's going to be like in the, like, the header. Yeah. At the Sanford is the meat. He's the meat. Buddy's like, what?
Is that the, is that sketch, or is that for Terrence, that commission?
Yes, it's for T-Money.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted me to call him.
T-Money.
T-Money. Like, wow. Is that why he likes Mr. Terrific? Because of the T?
The T, you probably.
I wanted to do a Mr. Terrific for him, but he insisted on Vixen.
Vixen. Yeah,
which is not bad. Vixen's kind of nice. Holly Berry.
Yeah.
As Vixen. Yeah. I mean, when I saw her on Swordfish, I was like, wow, she would make a great Vixen. I mean, I don't know if she's too old now or not. I don't think so.
I don't know. She's still pretty hot.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to keep it PG, though, man.
Yeah.
He's like,
that's as far as I'm
going.
As
far as it goes, yeah.
Well, I'll let you get back to that. I'm really glad that you got a lot of stuff in the pipe, man, and look forward to seeing that this summer.
Oh, one more thing. I don't know how much information this is going to help with, but I have a – being on a podcast is kind of hard to – you know, you kind of need like a – anyway. I'm doing an art exhibit in Columbia, February the 24th. That's the reception at Benedict College Fine Arts Gallery.
Yeah.
And it's from 5 to 7. Anyone interested in coming, I'll have tons of art on display, of course, framed, looking real artsy. Yeah. But it's going to be comic books. So it's kind of cool to cross over the two.
Awesome. So Sanford, do you have a website?
SanfordGreen.com.
Yeah.
And you can also find me on Facebook, and I tweet. I just started the tweeting.
Oh. Yeah, do you know, what's your tweet name?
I think Sanford. Sanford. I forgot it. It's either Sanford or Sanford Green, one of those two. But
add both of them.
Yeah, just throw it all in there. Throw it all in the hat and see what happens.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot, Sanford.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Wow, he was indeed super nice, just like he would be in person if you stopped by to talk to him at cons he's at.
He is very personable and very easy to talk to.
Yeah, this is the first time like I've seen Sanford and stuff, but this is the first time I've actually talked to him. And yeah, he's really friendly, super nice, doesn't mind if you're snapping pics of him and stuff. So he was really cool. I liked him.
So Sanford Green was there. Who else was there that you got to talk to, Adam?
I got to see Chrissy Zullo and Bridget.
Chrissy Zullo was wearing a totally awesome hat.
Where'd she get that hat from? Does anybody know?
I don't know. Where'd she get it?
It was really awesome.
Yeah. Huh.
And I mean, it must be really special to her since she wore it all day at a con.
Dude, that is an awesome Yeti hat. Whoever got her that is pretty awesome.
I bet you whoever it is doesn't listen to the show.
No, I bet. I bet that person.
I bet not.
Whoever that person may be does not listen to the show.
However, he did apparently listen to the Resolution show.
Did he comment?
He didn't, but he emailed me about it.
he listened to it and emailed you about it instead of commenting on it.
I'll give you another clue. He was on it. But yeah, Chrissy, how do you make Chrissy Zullo more adorable?
You put her in a Yeti hat.
Put her in a Yeti hat.
I got a picture of her smiling with the Yeti hat, and it's pretty adorable.
Could you not smile wearing that Yeti hat?
No. And Bridget was looking very, very cute as well.
Mm-hmm. She was. Again, pictures on the Flickr page of both Chrissy and Bridget. Don't stalk them. It's weird.
Yeah, please don't. They are just really nice people and awesome artists, and that's why we like them so much.
Yeah. Don't be awkward, because that's not cool.
Please don't be awkward. Although,
did we talk about Jason Latour? Yeah, did we talk about him there yet?
Yeah, don't stalk Jason Latour.
Well, Jason might like that.
I already, I already do. Does that make me a bad person?
No.
Jason might enjoy a stalker. I don't know. Just depends. Yeah, Jason's another funny one that if you get the opportunity, you should totally sit down and talk to. And Jason's got a lot of stuff going on right now.
He's like, so busy.
Yeah, because I think he's going to be a part of the Captain America. Is it the anniversary issue?
He is going to. There's a whole bunch of one-shots, and he's helping, I think. Or he's doing something.
Yeah, he was just in one of the Wolverines.
Yes.
Then, of course, he's got loose ends with Rico and Chris.
And his Noche Roja is coming out soon. Like, soon as in, like, soon, like, a couple weeks soon.
Yeah, I think so, too. I know he had a copy at the Minicon.
It looks really cool. Apparently, he finished that, like, a year and a half ago, and it's just now, like, finally getting around to getting published.
Yeah, so I guess 2011 is coming up, Jason.
Yes.
Are
you going to talk about those?
Yes. I got two Secret Invasion sketch covers. From Dwayne Ballinger and Jacob Campbell. We usually, I think every mini con since we've been going, we've got an interview with Dwayne and Chris.
This is the first year we do not have an audio discussion with Dwayne and Chris recorded.
Aww.
However, we got these awesome sketch covers from them, and I'm giving them both away. The first one is it's on the article that I wrote on how to win it, and the second one is going to be related to this show. I don't make you work too hard to win something awesome. I just want you to want to know that you're out there. So,
somewhere.
Let's see. What can I say? What can I say to do? I would say that to win this sketch cover, I want a quote from a Dwayne Ballinger or a J. Chris book.
Ooh.
So
interesting.
Unfortunately, any of you guys out there who don't have J. Chris.
No.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I know. Are you gonna?
No, you do it.
Oh, no, just no, somebody
no,
talk.
No, you do it.
No, you do it.
No.
No, you're Smoopy.
Well, for those of you out there on, say, the West Coast or in Australia who don't have access to any J. Chris or Dwayne Ballinger's,
unless you're near Cosmic Monkey, because they have some J. Chris stuff there.
Yeah. Well, fear not, for you can get Zigzag Mashup on Comixology. You can download that for free.
Yep, there's a Zigzag on Comixology for free.
Ooh.
I'd recommend go ahead and do that. So yeah, a quote from a J. Chris or Dwayne Ballinger book will get you the sketch cover. And I can't remember which one I gave away on the article, so it's whichever one's the opposite of that one.
Now, is this limited to the continental United States, or is this you'll send it wherever?
I will send it wherever. However, I am excluding Dollar Bin Direct contributors.
Dollar Bin Direct.
Oh.
Well, hey, I'm having you send the issue that I got to Chris Brunner anyway. So.
That was my lead-in. Having said that, the contest I last held, which was the Name That Creepy Monologue.
That was super creepy.
Was won by Heather, and which led me to change the rules of the Dollar Bin contest.
But I wasn't on that show.
No, I know. So Heather won, and I said I would send it to whoever, and she has chosen for me to send it to Chris Brunner.
Yep.
So Chris, that's coming your way.
I want you to put a little note in there that says, love, Heather.
Will do. That was my Charlotte MiniCon experience
and post.
Yeah, yours too?
Yeah.
Hmm. Heather, was that your Charlotte MiniCon experience?
For the most part, we should add that the MiniCon also has the tradition of the dollar bin lunch at Loopy's.
Yes. Yes, it
which
does.
Is a great local restaurant right across the street from the MiniCon. So
it's a terrible, terrible tradition that I barely get to be a part of.
Whatever. See, he brought you your gross cheese and chili.
That was awesome. I got a to-go box with like a layer of chili and then like an equally thick layer of cheese. It was great. Last year, yeah. I wolfed down some chili in about 2 seconds and I had to run back.
Yes, but if you're in Charlotte, you should go to Loopy's. And if you're not in Charlotte all the time, then you should do like Devin and order 3 entrees to eat and like 3 to take with you. I cannot believe how much he ate.
He just eats 2 entrees and takes 1 with him.
Don't exaggerate, Heather.
Yeah.
He ate 2 entrees and he takes 3 home with him.
Yeah.
I would like to add that he also takes his entire big slab of cornbread and smushes it all up into the chili. So he's eating a lot.
That sounds good.
So that was Charlotte MiniCon. I'm going to go ahead and edit all this, throw it together. And that'll all be seamless to you guys listening.
Or will it?
Or will it?
It totally will. I believe in Adam.
Hey, thanks for listening, guys. Next week, we got a show coming up. Well, because it's next week and that's what we do. But we're going to be meeting up at Ted's house and discussing probably Thor the Mighty Avenger. That's what it looks like.
Sweet!
The week after that, odds are we will be listening to an interview that Joel and I did with Mike Carey, writer on The Unwritten right now.
Ooh, I didn't realize that's what he did. I really like that series.
Yeah. And a bunch of other stuff, and we'll talk about that with Mike, and you'll hear that in a couple weeks. Probably the week after that is going to be the 2010 Dollar Bin Awards. So that reminds me, go ahead and go to the website. There should be a link on there by now or in the very near future to vote for the Best of 2010 for the Dollar Bin Awards. And of course, as always, anyone who votes is entered into a chance to win a bunch of free stuff that we've collected over the year of 2010.
Ooh, fancy.
Yep. So thanks for listening. I think it's the first time we've ever been able to actually tell you what's coming up in the next few weeks. Cherish it.
Cherish it. Love it.
Thanks, guys.
Good night, everybody.